Thursday, April 19th, 2007, and this is the House Committee on Education, the Subcommittee on Education Innovation. And I let the committee know, and we'll make it official, that if we're really good today and keep things moving along, we will get to play hooky, ha ha ha, next Tuesday and Thursday, but we'll get to attend the full. But it means
which we'll now be doing too.
Representative Cannon would not have to attend education.
Hey.
Meeting next Tuesday and Thursday. So you can go to the beach and catch up on your reading. Okay. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3338. And Representative Robles, you take the gavel so I can testify after committee staff tells us about the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3338 creates the Education System Design Team, specifies membership and duties of the design team, appropriates money from the general fund to the Office of the Governor for the design team, sunsets the team on the date of convening of the next regular biennial legislative session, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2007. There's a dash one amendment before you and underneath the agenda, which would replace the entire text of House Bill 3338, change the membership of and focus of the Education System Design Team to design a new legislative process for review and for decision-making regarding the Governor's Unified 2009-2011 K-20 Public Education Budget Request. The amendment would direct the design team to, quote, work with the Quality Education Commission, Post-Secondary Quality Education Commission established by the Governor, and with work groups created by the Joint Boards of Education to design a legislative system to review a comprehensive pre-kindergarten through higher education budget and policy presentation in collaboration with the Office of the Governor and work groups created with the Board of Education, design and recommend methods of financially supporting education system with the 40-40-20 goals, as they're known, the 40% high school graduates, 40% bachelor degree, and 40% with an associate degree, 40% with a bachelor's degree, and 20% with a high school diploma. This bill has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So we'll have Representative Comp. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, committee. My name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22. A few short years ago, all of you would not have even known my name, much less that I was a school principal. By the grace of God, I have been blessed with determination, tenacity, being a problem solver, and a change agent. Here I sit with you today, and I want to share the basics on how I have overcome the challenges of poverty, sexual abuse, and reaching major goals while being a single parent of four children. I have been successful because of incredible teachers, mentors, and family members who have given me the courage and the belief in myself to survive and succeed. Now it is my role and responsibility to provide opportunity for others. Therefore, I bring to you House Bill 3338. This bill is my contribution to ensure schools, parents, and students will be successful in Oregon. House Bill 3338 develops a legislative design team to set into place the infrastructure to reach key goals for our schools. As mentioned by staff, all students will graduate from high school. 40% of all students, high school students, will go on to earn an associate's degree or work equivalent jobs. And 40% of students will earn a bachelor's degree. Those are laudable goals, but I don't think we can do it without a plan. And it would be the charge of this design team to create that plan. And so, colleagues, I ask your support and consideration of House Bill 3338. And I have somebody that can help give a deeper description of that. And as Vice Chair Roblin will, you know, have some testimony to help you get a bigger picture, but I'm more than willing to answer any questions or that you have.
So are there any questions of this witness?
Representative
Dolan.
Chair Roblin. Representative Kump. I just got the amendment. Is there a timeline?
Chair Roblin and Representative Dahl, there is a timeline. I am an action-type person. I don't like to sit around and think about stuff forever. We have a tremendous amount of research on best practices, and the timeline is to give a report next February and then to the Legislative Assembly and then hopefully complete our plan as prescribed or needed for changes and adjustment after that, and so that it's completed by the end of 08.
Thank you very much.
Follow up.
The goals look familiar. Who have you worked with to arrive at those goals?
Thank you, Chair Roblin and Representative Dahl. These are the goals that, as you well know, this comes from the work that some of us did during the interim session. And it was a bipartisan, bicameral group. And we had a number of meetings to discuss, is there a crisis in education? Is there an urgency for solutions? And I've worked with that group, with the Oregon Business Council, Chalkboard, other legislators and members, and along with the governor's office.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Other questions? Representative.
Thank you. Representative Cupp, thank you for bringing this forward. I just in terms of how you envision the design team working, there's in Section 3, there is a request for $1 million from the general fund. How would this money be used in terms of the work of the design team?
Thank you, Chair Roblin and Representative Buckley. That $1 million would bring in whatever expert we needed with the limited time we have to develop a plan that is not only viable, but it will reach us to our goals. I know of people in this nation that charge, well, this was 10 years ago, $350,000 for a school district to develop a strategic plan. I know some of the people that we had working with us with the Oregon Business Council, premier people helping us do research and investigation, and the best costs of money, and it would be to bring in those experts and work with the technology possibly needed to move this endeavor forward.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, committee.
And next we'll have a group of two, James Sager and Duncan Weiss. Come on.
I'm assuming that excludes any members of this committee serving as a consultant.
Chair Comp, members of the committee, Vice Chair Roblin, Minnis. For the record, James Sager with Governor's Office. If I could, for a moment, give you some background to kind of surround the rewrite, the Dash 1 amendment, and I'm going to my handouts again. The top document is a nicely typed document. The second page is a highly technical artistic graph of the written document. But as they come around, let me explain. Over the last couple years, at the direction of the governor, we have been working to build a system of collaboration and work around the Joint Boards of Education, all the work groups that they have established. We've included the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, the Quality Education Commission, all the partners to really begin to pull together and coordinate not only aligning curriculum, but aligning policy and making sure that budget actually drives policy. And as we prepared to enter this legislative session, we had hoped that at the beginning of the session there might be a process in place whereby we could come forward to a large group, say the education committees and the full Ways and Means Committee, and give the overview picture of the education enterprise so that you see the big picture before you then have to break down and look at individual budgets. My highly technical drawing tried to, Representative Comp and I have a similar need for pictures, and so what I was just trying to show there was all these different pieces that have been added over the last few years, and I put a big asterisk next to the 2007 session there, because as we were prepared to come forward, in fact, there isn't a process in the current structure of the legislative body to have that kind of presentation come forward. So that's why, in discussing with Representative Comp the Dash 1 amendment, the focus was that we need to make sure that we have that process in place by the start of the 2009 session, and continue to and have that group work over the interim with all these different education partners and education committees that are continuing to build this relationship and move towards the goal, so that we're all ready for the presentation come 2009. I would also like to emphasize, and I appreciate Representative Dahlem's question as to where the target came from, the 40-40 target. Again, it has been suggested that that might be an overly ambitious goal by 2025, but it is a goal that the governor has recognized we need to set a marker for ourselves, and we need to stretch ourselves a little bit. The Joint Boards of Education have adopted these goals. It is what we have been working on for the past year in designing, like I say, the alignment of the policies and the budget, trying to design a system whereby, as I've mentioned before, we're not just looking in two-year intervals, but actually how do we, what do we need in place in order to be in a position that by 2025, in fact, we might be able to hit these targets and be moving towards it. So just try to give you a little bit of background as to what we've done to date, what we plan to do over the next interim period, and we hope that that can be in collaboration with this committee of the legislature so that we're all ready for 2009.
Good afternoon, Chair Comp, members of the committee. My name is Duncan Wise. I'm president of the Oregon Business Council. I'm also a member of the State Board of Education and the co-chair of the board, the joint board on budget. I strongly support this legislation. I'm thrilled it is here. I think this could be the sleeper of the session. If this works as well as I know it will with the proper legislative team and staff behind you, I think this could make more difference in the future of education than you can imagine. And I've had the chance to talk with all of you, some of you in our work group, and all of you over the last few months. And I think what's really important about this bill is that it recognizes that to get where we want to go in terms of our vision for education, dramatic improvement in education performance and delivery over the next 10 to 20 years, the legislature itself has to think about how it does business. And I want to stress that. We all know we need to change. The joint boards need to change. The Board of Education, schools, we all need to change to get where we want to go, including the legislature. And we talked a lot in our work group that, again, a great bipartisan group with the support of the Speaker, Speaker Minnis, and President Courtney, a great group that came together during the interim. And we talked about the legislative process. And frankly, let's be honest, it's quite reactive to the folks coming in here. If we're going to get where we want to go, given the huge responsibility you have over the entire education system, the legislature itself needs to communicate a bipartisan vision for where you want to go, and you need to hold everyone in the system accountable for moving in that direction, and you need to give them the support they need to help them be successful through budget, through policy changes, through all the changes they need to do, that we need to make to get from here to there. And without a proactive legislature, we're not going to get where we want to go. So what would that look like? We had a lot of chance to think about that during the interim, and we have a lot of ideas that I think you can carry forward with this design team. First of all, you do need to have a vision, and I remember Representative Roblin stressing that you've got to come around to a vision for where you want to take this huge investment that you make in education. And again, the 40-40-20 vision is, I think, a great starting point. That's not complete. You need to keep coming back to it. But the main message is we've got to educate ourselves at much higher levels than ever before in human history to get where we want to go in terms of our social, economic, and civic life in Oregon in the 21st century. We've done this before. We have dramatically improved education achievement in the 50s. We've done this before, but we've got to recognize we're at a point where we've got to ramp up to a whole different level. Now, how do we get there? We know we can't get there with the education system as it's currently designed. We have to redesign the system. It involves both redesign and it will involve investment and carefully targeted investment to make sure we're putting it to best use throughout the education continuum. And so we've got to go through that in a purposeful way of redesigning the system. We've argued there are three major components of the redesign. One is you've got to have an aligned curriculum, and James has done a huge amount through the joint boards to start focusing on that issue. We've made a lot of progress in this last 2 years. A lot more needs to be done, and the new high school diploma requirements, a whole series of things need to be done to have a curriculum that allows students to move as far and as fast as they can go in their education attainment. We've got to have a new data system. We've given huge support to that, and it looks like you are again, for us to be able to monitor progress of students throughout the system and track progress and track the progress and performance of individual schools. And last and certainly not least, we need a new budget system. And you've heard about that. Nancy, under the governor's office, Nancy Heiligman has presented some design ideas. The budget system that she's proposing, both focusing on students and the performance of individual students, and also, as the governor has proposed, looking at long-term forecasts of need and making sure we've got the resources to provide it, will be an entirely different way of budgeting education in the future, much more oriented around groups of students and their learning outcomes than around the three silos that we've used traditionally. Those are big changes. Plus, you need, as you each session, need to go through and understand the performance of the system at every level, pre-K through adult learning and higher education. So very big task that we're trying to achieve, and I would argue that unless you think about your own processes, how you organize your committees, how you organize the budget, how you organize all your work, we are not going to get where we want to go. You're too important. And so what this design team would do is think about the vision, think about your processes in light of the vision and what your role is in making these changes, and then design the committee processes and the budget processes and the distribution processes so that you can effectively serve your role in making policy to support schools and being highly successful, to give them the resources they need to be successful and moving forward. So huge opportunity. To the budget, I strongly encourage you to put resources into this. If this were, you're a Fortune 100 company when you think about education. This is a huge enterprise you're overseeing. You're in the middle of it. This is the highest leverage work I can imagine. If you can change your processes to be more productive, you will have high leverage. I will tell you, we put resources in this group that we work with. I think the legislature, it's incumbent on you now to step up and say, yeah, we need to put money into this to do this kind of design. The consulting services to engage a larger legislature, it's going to be very important to have the staff and the support you're going to need. From the executive side, as the governor's appointing, we're willing and more than willing, we're eager to work with you on this. I mean, there's clearly an executive role, but I think the bill, as it's focused on your role in collaboration with the executive branch, the boards, and school system itself, I just think it's a huge opportunity to move forward. So, thank you.
Thank you, both James and Duncan. Representative Minnis?
Thank you.
Now a test is here.
I think this is an exciting bill, and I'm glad to see it before us today. But I have a question for you, Mr. Sager. I'd like to address it to you. One of the things we've talked about, and they talked about in the interim, was transparency in budgeting and allowing us to really look at the whole spectrum of funding and all the silos, but also all the revenue streams. And now I'm talking respective right now to K-12. As I sit here today, it is very difficult and almost impossible to get an accurate number for K-12 when you federal funds, other funds, general fund, what they get local dollars, you know, state dollars. There is no spreadsheet that I have seen, and I know it's been requested, and nobody seems to be forthcoming. And when it's asked for, people kind of fidget around and basically refuse to give that information to the members of this assembly, which I think is problematic. Is that something that the governor's office can ask for and produce that kind of information, so not just to this committee, but maybe to the Ways and Means, members on the Ways and Means Committee, that could look at that, you know, have just a spreadsheet. This is what the local dollars are. This is our participation. This is federal dollars, that kind of thing. Do you believe that's something the governor's office could help us acquire?
Chair Comp, Representative Minnis, thank you for the question. And I guess my answer would be clearly yes. I mean, that is what we have been working on, understanding that at all levels of the education continuum that there are various revenue streams and different schools, different school districts, different campuses get different amounts from each of those revenue streams. But in fact, that's part of the work that we've asked Nancy Heiligman to do for us is, first of all, identify how we can bring consistency throughout the system. We have the K-12 database initiative that captures a lot of that data in a consistent manner. We don't have that kind of system for the community college, and we're fine-tuning the university system. So we're working on making sure that we present the material in a similar manner so that, in fact, we can look at all the different revenue streams. We talked about this somewhat yesterday in one of the hearings where we're questioning, are these just local dollars, or are these state and local dollars or federal dollars included? So again, this is part of the work that the governor and working with the joint boards that we want to make sure that at the end of the day, we can actually answer that question both to you and to the general public to say these are the dollars coming forward and capture that, the value of what we're investing.
So you're telling me then that we don't know? Is that what you're saying? Or I'm not talking about the whole spectrum now. I'm talking K-12. So what I'm hearing you say, and maybe I misunderstand your answer, but what I hear you saying is that you can't tell me as of today with the respective revenue streams, and I'm not talking about, you know, the breakdown to local districts. I'm just talking about the big overall numbers. That you cannot tell me today what those numbers are.
Chair Comp, Representative Minnis, no, I believe we can pull those numbers together on those macro levels. The question would be at, and I'd have to check with the Department of Ed, at what point we have audited data so that way we are actually giving you accurate information as opposed to what is projected or what we believe is going to be coming in during the course of the year. But being able to break down what the revenues were that were received by the state of Oregon to be distributed out to districts for K-12, we can develop those numbers.
So can you do a spreadsheet with federal funds, other funds, general funds, and local dollars?
Representative Minnis, I will be happy to go talk with the department and see what we can put together for
you. What kind of timeline, Jim, do you think we could get that in?
Chair Comp, Representative Minnis, off the top of my head, I'm not sure, but I would be happy to get back to you before the end of the day.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just a follow-up, and then, Duncan, I certainly will allow your comments. Since the DBI was established only a couple of biennials ago, because I'd be happy to see that, or, you know, for the last three biennium,
sure.
Or, you know, what's feasible with the current database system that we have available. Duncan.
No, I'm going to wear my other. I'm a member of the Quality Education Commission, so I can't resist. No, Madam Chair, Representative Minnis, I think we can give you a lot of data. Ryan Reeder, and I realize you probably haven't seen Nancy Heiligman's budget piece, which was presented to Ways and Means. It's fabulous. I mean, it gives you an incredible insight into where the K-12 dollars go, broken by elementary, middle, high school, special ed, transportation. It's a great window to where those dollars, and she does break out federal, state, and local dollars in that. Now, depending exactly what you want, I mean, obviously, there are a lot of questions around K-12, but it was through the investment, you know, the governor's leadership and investment by the Gates Foundation. It was about $350,000 just to give magnitudes of why this is not cheap to do, but what Nancy has produced is I think a potentially enormously important budget model for us to be thinking about as a way of helping you understand where the money goes, and more importantly, helping you make policy decisions on where to put your attention, how many dollars we're spending, what's the performance, and what can we do differently to get more performance at the system out at every stage of the education continuum, and that's the vision I know I share, and I hope we all share for how we want to move the whole continuum in the future.
I'm going to have Representative Minnis follow up, but we have a couple of other members in the queue yet.
Okay. So did you give that information to the committee yesterday that was interested in that data? There is a committee.
Madam Chair, this was presented to the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education.
Okay.
And I know it's presented to the State Board, so okay. I mean, I've seen it.
Can I just clarify? We did have the House Education Committee did meet with the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee and had a presentation with Nancy Heiligman. She gave out some think preliminary rough figures, and we had a good discussion about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, let me just say I am excited about this. I think this is good. I think it will help move us along. But again, I would encourage us to try to, you know, when lawmakers are trying to balance a budget and they're looking across the spectrum at all the revenue streams, we just, in this building, we focus on general fund, basically. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't get the full picture.
Right.
You don't know what the local dollars are. You don't know what the federal dollars are. So if we can have a spreadsheet that presents that, and that's available to the whole assembly, basically, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Representative Dahlem.
Yes, Duncan, looking at, and I got clarification of the dates from Representative Comp. There's a February 8th date for the committee to report in 2008. That's 10 months from now. And I would assume then there would be some interim time until the next session. Is that time enough? Having looked...
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, absolutely. I mean, the question, if this isn't viewed as a... You know, you've got to take this as you're in the middle of transforming the most important public system imaginable. You've got to put energy into it. You've got to put resources. And if you're committed to doing this, you can do an enormous amount in 18 months. But it will ultimately be about redesigning the way the 2009 legislative system, legislature operates.
I think that's 10 months for the study, not 18.
Well, but then you've got then this follow-up into the next. I mean, 10 months and then.
But you're comfortable with
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, I know.
That's
I think you
question.
Need to move fast. And well, a lot of thought has already gone into this, as you know. And I think we can make serious progress quickly.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mentor. I just want to go back to Representative Menezes' question a little bit, in that the numbers that Nancy has are really the audited numbers from the past. Right. They aren't really helping us with how much money is there today. Is that correct? I mean, it's difficult. Can you find us the numbers with respect to how much federal money we anticipate for the next biennium? How much state money how much local money can we have for the next biennium? Do we have those kinds of numbers as well?
Representative Compa, our Chair Compa, Representative Roblin, that is part of what the work we're building. I mean, on the one hand, we have Nancy helping us put together a system using audited data so that we know it's absolutely accurate and we can balance. What we need to be able to do is figure out a way to have better forecasting. Federal funds are extremely difficult to forecast because legislative sessions or congressional sessions can change their mind quite quickly. But that is, in fact, part of what we need to do, both for K-12 as for the post-secondary system.
And property taxes, of course, are forecast. Yeah. We have a good forecast of property taxes.
Right.
Can you put down what they've given us in the past?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
The last
sure.
Time.
Sure. Right.
And would it be reasonable to maybe say estimated or, you know, if things mm-hmm. hold true today, this
yep.
is what will be reasonable?
And, yeah, we did this in the Quality Ed Commission the last time. We've done just that. I totally agree with you, Representative Miss. So that's what we need to do and, you know, get your best information about what the budget's look like.
Well, the comment I'd make right now in the process is what we will. I think what we want to do for the whole legislative body is educate all of us mm-hmm. on what this looks like.
Right.
Having seen just the model explained, it would be very difficult for us in this committee or the revenue committee to develop a trend line predicated on the information we have. We don't have any. But this model will give us mm-hmm. a trend line, and I think it's imperative that we have this study. I'd like to see it in 6 months, but if you say 10,
yeah, really. Oh, I didn't understand. You're coming.
Oh, I thought he was going the other way.
He was.
Representative Buckley, did you have a comment?
So, just to close the conversation, what you believe that you can produce a document that gives us past information and then maybe estimates if you go on past performance?
Chair Comp, Representative Minutes, let me break this into two pieces. I thought I heard that you requested to get some information as recent as we possibly can on those numbers, and I'll grab Brian Reeder and others at the department, and we'll get to work on that, and I'll get an answer back to you as to how quickly. Part of the development that we need to be able to work on, that we're planning to work on as far as the education side, is to be able to develop these kinds of forecast tools so that we can do a better job, not only of explaining to the legislature, but also to our campuses and to our districts
excuse me,
where we see this going. And so today I can't tell you what we're projecting for future biennia, but we probably can give you fairly recent data on what we actually received and what is estimated to be received, for instance, in federal funds. And I'll work with Brian on that starting today.
Duncan, has there always any time, well, we started the database initiative back in 99.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I should have
asked.
You're on a roll, sorry. And I'll quit talking here. But has there, in those federal funds, has there ever been a large shift that is less than we anticipated?
Representative Minnis, I'm not sure. I don't remember the answer to that.
Chair Comp, Representative Minnis, there have been shifts that have been cuts in programs that were anticipated. And so that's why I say it's very difficult, because entire programs have been recommended to be cut out of the federal budget, for instance, that we had been receiving for several years on things like safe and drug-free schools and other areas. So those are things that we can only, you know, kind of put our finger in the air. But again, that's what we're trying to work on, is how can we get a better handle on those revenue streams that appear to be fairly consistent, and then those that are really volatile, and how we make plans around that.
So No Child Left Behind, has that been a pretty consistent funding stream, or is that kind of up and down as
it's
well?
It's actually increased, but again, it consolidated some. I don't know how James has the detail better than I do, but we have, again, modeled all the federal funds, including the Title I funds, so that into the quality ed, so we show, when you look at the prototype schools and the database, you can see not just local, the property tax and state, but also the federal, and then we ask, what is it going to take to achieve our goals, looking at all the funds available, not just the state and local funds. So, yeah, we made a policy. I was on the committee that we did that about, I think it was the second or third round of the quality ed model. So we've now got that fully integrated. I totally agree. We need to look at the whole resource as we look at the reasonable state level of funding for the K-12 system.
Thank you.
Just a question to committee, as you're talking about the different title funds. I know that there's at least 7 different categories of title funds. Does the committee want information about each one of those funds, or just the consolidated amount for federal funds?
I was trying not to cough.
Okay. I didn't hear the question. Oh, do you want information broken down in the distinct categories of title funds, or just one consolidated amount of federal funds?
Well, I think if we break it down, it'll take them longer.
But it definitely, well, yeah, and it's
what,
just...
I mean, Madam Chair, you probably know better the format that would be most beneficial.
I think for any study for right now, just the consolidated amount should be sufficient.
It's probably easier for
me. And one of this actually is a wonderful example of why we need the design team, because one of the things you need to do the budget properly is to have people like Nancy and Brian come to you with formats and say, does this help you? Which is exactly what we did on our team. So does this help you? Because, you know, you all have different ways you want to think about it, different questions you want to ask. And what we need in the budget system is something that allows you to quickly get access to what you want, and recognizing that you have a variety of different interests. And that is a design issue. I mean, right now, I would absolutely agree, throughout the education continuum, there's a whole lot of information you cannot get easily and readily, and that's a huge problem. And that is one of the key purposes of the design team, so that you can quickly get what you need as you make critical policy decisions for the pre-K 20 system.
Well, thank you, Duncan and James, and thank you, committee. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3338, and I'm going to open the public hearing on House JM3.
I want a work session.
Do you want to do a work session and move it?
Oh, well.
Yeah.
You want to? Okay.
Let's get it out of here.
Let's get it out of here. Okay.
Let's get it out of here.
I want to close the public hearing on HJM3 and open a work session on House Bill 3338.
One motion?
Yes, ma'am. We need dash ones.
Madam Chair, I move we adopt the dash one amendments on House Bill 3338.
Yes. There's been a motion to move the dash one amendments into House Bill 3338. Any discussion? Objections? So moved.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3338 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
There's a motion to move House Bill 338 to the full Education Committee with a due pass as amended.
Okay.
Any discussion? Further comment? Andy, would you call the roll?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Bonds?
Aye.
Representative
Roblin?
Aye.
Representative
Wisdom?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 3338 is moved to the full committee. Thank you, committee. I do think it's going to make a difference. With that, then, I am going to have to close it, don't I?
Yes.
I've closed the work session on House Bill 338, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 3. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Joint Memorial 3, the original text, was designed to urge Congress to adequately fund the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001. But you have before you a -1 amendment that would replace the entire text of House Joint Memorial 3 and would address a memorial to the U.S. Secretary of Education explaining the history of the Technology-Enhanced Student Assessment, TESA, the contract dispute in 2006-2007, and Vantage's decision to discontinue providing access to Oregon students to TESA on or about March 9, 2007, and the Oregon Department of Education's resorting to paper and pencil testing. The request that the U.S. Department of Education work with Oregon authorities in determining if adequate yearly progress has been met for 2006-2007 if Oregon scores drop to a level suggesting that the disruption of TESA service caused the drop. There's no subsequent referral for this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Ed Dennis from the Department of Education, he's taken on the... I can't think of a metaphor for the burden. He's taken on the incredible task of figuring this out and working through the process with this. Mr. Dennis.
Thank you, Chair Comp, members of the committee. My name is Ed Dennis, and I work at the Department of Education. Your committee administrator laid out the outline very well. Chair Comp actually asked us to work with her to draft a joint memorial because we all share the same goal, and that is to not have a school or students be unfairly labeled because of something that was outside of their control. I have some background on TESA. And then, more specifically, my request, and of course, I can take any questions if you have them. The memorial would assist us in moving forward with the U.S. Department of Education and Secretary Margaret Spellings to ask them to work with Oregon when determining adequate yearly progress for the state. Superintendent Castillo is going to be meeting with the U.S. Secretary within the next month. We've already had a series of conversations at a high level where we're trying to prepare the U.S. Department to be open to treating Oregon with some flexibility if there are issues due to the disruption and the move from the TESA system to back to paper and pencil. Just a little bit of background about what we do and what the system's for. The state of Oregon administers tests in mathematics, reading, literature to all 3rd through 8th graders and high school students, typically in the 10th grade. Science and social science are administered to students in grades 5, 8, and high school, and writing at grades 4, 7, and high school to determine if students are meeting Oregon academic standards. We were already doing most of these tests prior to No Child Left Behind, but now they fulfill the purpose for NCLB as well. What our former contractor did was they provided the online platform, if you will, and that students use to take the tests created by ODE. ODE does not currently have the technical capability to create such a platform in-house, nor the budget to develop such a capacity, although maybe that'd be a conversation worth having at some point in the future. Because having the testing take place online is less costly than paper and pencil. It allows students to get their test results immediately, and students and districts have access to the details of the test within just a few days. It's also very cost-effective. We've been able to offer students the opportunity to take each test 3 times, and they can use the highest score as the indicator for progress towards meeting the state standards and thus for the federal requirements as well. The rest of my testimony is really much better summarized within the memorial. The memorial sort of takes out this testimony, which has all been carefully vetted by the DOJ folks and approved, because we are in a court process. And that's not to discourage you from asking me questions, because I'll just do the best that I can. But with your permission, I'm going to skip over the next couple of pages and just assure you that the memorial really captures that. and then end with a direct request. First, I want to emphasize to you that ODE exhausted every legal option to continue with TESA until the end of the school year. We're now working with the Oregon Department of Justice to explore all of our legal options. And let me explain in one way how we explored all of our legal options. I made an offer to our vendor to pay them over $1 million to finish the last 6 weeks of the school year. We paid them $1.2 million per month. That's what we have been paying them over the life of our contract. So, and you know, believe me, I wasn't looking forward to coming in front of this committee or Ways and Means and explaining why I paid $1 million to get through 6 weeks of testing if I could have pulled that off. And I would have felt pretty dirty about it, given the situation. But we could have done that. That would have been legal. We couldn't figure out a way to get at what their real intent was, which was to find a way to, repeatedly we were asked to exclude or to move out of the current contracting process and put the former vendor back in to as the contractor moving forward for the next contract period, 5 to 7 years. And that was something that we couldn't do ethically or legally. So in the meantime, this resolution, plus all of our other efforts, send a respectful request to Secretary Spellings and the U.S. Department of Education that ask them to consider the unique circumstances that Oregon faces due to our testing disruption. I understand well from a couple of you personally and others from what I've heard that you may have strong feelings about the decision that we made and the consequences that that's had. I hope, though, that we can put aside any differences here today and send a very strong and united message to the federal government that the schools and school children of Oregon are our first priority. In other words, I'm asking that we work together to ensure that our students are not punished for circumstances that are beyond their control. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I want to thank you for your consideration of this measure, especially thanks to the chair.
Yeah. And I want to take a moment to thank Mr. Dennis, because coming from a school district that has many challenges and being a principal of a school, and I don't say this proudly, but we did not make adequate yearly progress in the 8 years as principal, and the reason why is because the way the formula is designed to make adequate yearly progress, you have to meet that bar 2 years in succession. And any time you miss it, even by 1/10 of 1/100 of a percent of 64 delineators, you have not met adequate yearly progress. And so I wanted to make sure that we as a state could, whatever we could do to hold the children and those teachers harmless. I cannot tell you what it's like to stand in front of a staff room full of incredible professionals and say, well, we missed it by 0.2% again. And it is. And so to have so much weight put on one assessment, Mr. Dennis was very kind and generous, and because I said I want our voices as a legislature on the record saying do not hold our schools accountable for something that was out of their control. So with that, Representative Dahl, you had a question?
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen this today, and when we looked at HJM3, I think we had the full consent of the committee that we're going to let Congress know that if they were going to mandate, they were going to pay. Or at least that's what we wanted them to do. And we wanted them to know that calling the tune and not paying the piper was inappropriate. And I've had the advantage of visiting with Mr. Dennis. I don't want to lose that message. But if you mandate, you pay. I hear about, and I'm going to ask directly, are we protecting the teachers and students of Oregon, or are we protecting the Department of Ed?
Chair Comp, Representative Dahlem, it's our, you know, my goal, and I believe our goal at the department right now, is to be able to go into this situation and get flexibility from the U.S. Department of Education and from Secretary Spellings. It's my understanding that the way this decision will be made, whether or not they grant us any flexibility based on our pleas, if we make the pleas, if we see a statistical variance after the scores come back because of the change from tested to paper and pencil, we want them to have an open ear and to be willing to grant us some flexibility so that some school that would have otherwise made the appropriate rating doesn't get downgraded, and therefore there'd be penalties.
Let me lay this scenario in front of you. With the way that TESA has floundered, fallen, and failed our students and our teachers, I don't think we need to create an excuse for them. If the federal government punishes us for a test that we changed how we administer it in the middle of the stream, I think our teachers and students have very firm ground to stand on and say, you changed the rules on us in the middle of the game. I don't think they need any excuses. I don't think any have to be made for them. I don't think Principal Comp has to stand in front of her staff and explain why the state and the vendor didn't get along and you're being punished. I think we've handed them a ready-made excuse. This diabolical buffoonery has, in my case, or in my feeling, alleviated them of any responsibility to perform.
Okay. Chair Comp, Representative Dahlem, I don't think it has in the view of the federal government. And in feeling things out, conversations at very high level, although not yet with the secretary, that's to come in just a few weeks, it is very clearly our understanding that there will be no pass for this year based on the issues that have happened here. There is an opportunity, perhaps, to have a discussion about flexibility if we can prove that there's a greater than normal statistical deviation based on the changes and the challenges that happen to students and teachers across the state. So I don't think it would be good strategically for us to just tell the feds, you know, we had a problem, you need to give us a pass this year. It's not going to fly.
Before you ask, Representative Dahlem, because I know not every member of the committee has spent a full lengthy discussion with Mr. Dennis. Could you give us a little bit of background about how we got where we are?
Sure.
And I know this is going to take some time, people in the audience, but I think it's important.
I have to sort of stay to the script on this because our contract with Vantage began in March of 2001, and our experience with Vantage was very positive for the next few years. Originally, the contract was to end on June 30th, 2005. It was ultimately extended until June 30th, 2007. In the original contract, the parties were to enter into good faith negotiations if the base volume tests exceeded a stated threshold. In July 2004, we negotiated a contract amendment with Vantage that stated as follows. Quote, the limit of 500,000 tests is removed from the contract. Now there is no limit. It is clear and direct. As I said, our relationship with Vantage was good until last year, when we developed a new request for proposals required by state procurement regulations. On March 22, 2006, a Vantage employee emailed ODE staff to say that Vantage itself would be interested in a way to renew their contract, but without the state proceeding with an open competitive RFP. On May 2006, in an oral conversation, Vantage again asked for ODE to find a way to avoid an open competitive process. ODE declined to go this route and instead chose an open competitive process consistent with Oregon law. Vantage informed ODE owed Vantage additional money for previous year's testing, but that the issue of back invoices would be dropped if Vantage could continue as the contractor for TESA. They did not produce the additional invoices. On July 24th, Vantage's lawyer reiterated in a phone call that Vantage thought ODE owed Vantage money for past testing, but he did not provide details, and we asked for them repeatedly. On July 25th, the Oregon Department of Justice wrote requesting clarification on the claim. On August 8th, Vantage responded saying they refused to discuss any details of their claim. On October 3rd, Vantage was informed by Department of Administrative Services, or DAS, that their response to the RFP had not met minimum requirements, and they would be declared, or they were being declared, non-responsive for not meeting mandatory requirements of the RFP. On October 11th, 8 days after Vantage was removed from the competitive process by DAS, for the first time, ODE began to receive invoices from Vantage, all of them based on the argument that ODE had exceeded the old 500,000 annual test limit. And these invoices were supposedly two, three, and 1 year old, but incidentally, I suppose they came in numerical order. The invoices, you know, it was 803, 804, or 806 or something. I learned that after I wrote this testimony originally. Over the next few months, our lawyers attempted to get Vantage to clarify this claim. Then, on January 23rd, Vantage informed us they were giving us 90 days' notice that they were terminating the contract. They claimed they were terminating for cause on January 24th and also terminating based on 90 days' notice, quote-unquote, for convenience. Vantage's notice was cause for great concern because it would mean interrupting the testing program before the year was out, causing great disruption and hardship on children, teachers, and districts, and potentially interfering with our ability to meet NCLB requirements and triggering huge federal fines and penalties. All of these things have been very real to me. I've gotten lots of calls, seen and talked to lots of educators about the impacts. Which is why we worked so hard and continued negotiating with Vantage, because our top priority was to keep TESA operative after April 24th until at least late May. In the course of those negotiations on February 13th, Vantage again asked orally if there is, the Vantage CEO asked me if there was any way they could get the next contract so they could continue to serve as our TESA vendor. They said, again, that they'd be willing to forgive the claim for millions of dollars for past testing if such an arrangement were made. When ODE declined to interrupt the existing contract process, we were now beginning to sign with the new vendor. A number of problems with the TESA system emerged. For example, students started to take tests and the system cut them off in the middle. Answers were filled in even before a student started to take a test. And others would finish a test and then the system would lose the data. Starting on February 22nd, the system began to fail regularly. Although we continued to try to negotiate an extension beyond April 24th, we also made it clear that we would insist on satisfactory performance and additional payments would be contingent on satisfactory performance. Vantage asked for all the money up front. On February 26th, Vantage reported to ODE that their entire system crashed, and they reported to us that data from as many as 18,000 students who tested that day was lost. When the system was reported by Vantage as restored, districts across the state reported unacceptably slow system response times, students being dropped out of the system repeatedly, and the students not being able to log in at all. Maybe some of you heard some of these concerns as well as I. We received hundreds of calls about TESA problems at our three call centers. In fact, in only 1 3-hour period, one of our call centers received 119 calls from teachers and district officials complaining about the TESA system. I think that was the Willamette ESD call center. Vantage reported that this same day was a good day for TESA and that the system has worked well for the past weeks and months. On Friday, March 9th, Vantage interrupted students' testing by posting a notice on TESA claiming they had terminated TESA services because ODE would not pay their bills. That's when we had two very difficult choices. One, tell the U.S. Department of Education that we would not finish testing. Oregon would become the only state in the history of NCLB not to finish. And by all accounts, the consequences of that choice would be far-reaching and expensive for Oregon schools. In other words, it wouldn't just be a financial penalty to the Department of Education. That's something I would have accepted readily. It would have been a financial penalty to all of those title funds, potentially, that were discussed earlier. And those add up. And then option two, which is what we chose, move to a paper and pencil alternative, but just for this spring. While this is clearly a poor choice because of the disruption it will create and the class time it's going to take, this choice is better than the alternative because of a couple of things. One, it will keep us in compliance with federal government regulations and allow districts to continue to receive federal funding. Two, it will allow us to keep year-to-year data in place, assisting with the development of a growth model eventually. We still believe in online testing. We're confident with the new contractor, Oregon will again have a testing system that is one of the most cost-effective, flexible, and responsive to students and educators in the country. And looking to the future, we have two goals. The first is to provide a valid, reliable test score for every student in the state. And the second, which is why I'm here today, is to ensure that all schools and school districts meet their obligations under state and federal law. this decision was not one that we took lightly. I live with a school, an educator, a child development specialist. I heard daily about the concerns and from friends and allies about the burden that this was creating for students. But frankly, I think this was more than a vendor and an agency not getting along. This was, we were being asked to do things that we could not do. When I began to get more involved in this process, I pushed back on all the lawyers and staff who had already been involved. I, of course, you know, we're talking to them, but I went to DOJ, I went right to Pete Shepard, asked for a new set of legal advisors, the best that he could give me at that time, and took a fresh look at the whole thing to try to make this right. And we came to the same conclusion that all of those people who had been working on it prior to us had, that there was no, there was not going to be a way to satisfy the vendor short of having them continue to be the vendor. And there was no way we could legally do that once we had made the commitments to an open and competitive bid process. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wisnant.
Thank you. Mr. Dennis, I have a lot of compassion for what happened here, but first of all, Madam Chair, could we get a copy of what all he reported to us here is what
yes.
happened, when, and where?
Most of it is within the...
Not the details. He
not was. The details, but he...
I have that. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize for not giving
Mr. Dennis provided
and,
that.
And Madam Chair, and this is not what, you know, the initial... House Joint Memorial 3 was all about. I've had the experience or opportunity to write letters to foreign governments and to write letters to other federal heads of departments, and I'm not sure that this is
the appropriate mechanism.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I don't think the legislature should be involved in this. I would have, you know, real concerns, and I cannot support
okay.
putting this in a joint resolution to the Secretary of Education on behalf of the legislative body. To me, that's this is a you know Department of Education superintendent or the you know the governor or whatever. But I don't think this body should be doing this.
Okay.
I mean, they've got a problem, and I have to understand. I want to help them, but I don't think that this is the mechanism that we should be expressing that to.
Thank
I strongly disagree.
Okay, well, it was a suggestion that I had representative, and so the department was being very nice to
okay.
me.
I saw him in the chair.
No, that's all right. I appreciate your perspective. Representative Minnis, did you have any other comments?
No.
Okay, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would respectfully disagree with my colleague. We all represent school districts who will conceivably be impacted if the test scores do drop down because of the use of paper and pencil. And I would welcome the chance to actually try to communicate our great concern with that happening through no fault of our school districts who were involved. And in response to the concern about No Child Left Behind, which I obviously share, our congressional delegation, I believe to a person, is pounding that same theme in D.C., that our state cannot afford to have an unfunded mandate of this nature. And I believe that's a very good communication. And I would note in the memorial on page 3 that we're asking the United States Department of Education, line 24, to work with our state, not to waive, not to take that huge, but basically we're making a request as representatives of our districts for the department to work with us to make sure that what's happened here does not have a negative impact on our schools and our school districts. So I would offer that back as commentary. And just, I guess one question for Mr. Dennis on the memorial. I'm not an attorney. Page 2, lines 23 through 25, talks about it's the one place that came out to me that everything else looks like it could be documented very clearly. Is there documentation to show that there was repeated attempts to negotiate in good faith? That's the one thing that stood out to me as being perhaps not being able to be verified by specific documentation unless you have that.
Chair Comp, Representative Buckley, a court, a judge will decide that. But, yes, we believe very strongly that we that we can document that. Thank you.
Mr. Olson, you had a comment?
Yeah,
can you help
us
out?
A clarification just regarding the original text of the measure and the issue of federal funding there. While it may be being amended out in this version, there is a Senate Joint Memorial 12 which passed the out of the Education Committee and the Senate, and is actually most likely going to be referred to the House Education Committee, which will deal with somewhat similar to the original text of this measure. So this committee, I believe, will have an opportunity to weigh in on that aspect, even though this memorial is being amended.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to give Mr. Dennis the opportunity to complete his story by telling us what the department is seeking in its lawsuit. Can you go into that at all?
Chair Comp, Representative Cannon, thanks for the question. Our focus right now is on protecting our most immediate interests. They, because of our past relationship, or actually we would argue our current relationship until April 24th, they have about 9,000 of our test items. And while I find this hard to believe, I'm told that the market value is about $1,000 a piece on those test items. So, they've been about $9 million worth of our intellectual property, and we need to make sure that they're not sharing that with anybody else, which would taint our intellectual property and potentially render it useless. So that's very high on our list. We also need to ascertain that they've given us all the relevant data so that we know every kid who's already tested or halfway completed, et cetera. That saves money for districts that can choose then not to test that student if they've already met the benchmark. I'd say lower down on the list is the breach of contract and, potential damages. This company has deep pockets, but those things get harder to prove in a court of law. And so our primary interest right now is protecting our intellectual property and our interests. We're not letting go of those other important issues, the breach of contract. But we're focusing right now on protecting the state's property.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dennis. I just have one question for the committee. Representative Wisnett, you have a thought?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Dennis, I've continuously praised the superintendent for getting a waiver to No Child Left Behind concerning our eastern and rural schools and not having a teacher qualified in that language, and how she was able to work that out back in Washington. You mentioned that there was a letter from the superintendent. And is that completed? Was the response to that? Because I guess that's where I'm having my big concern here is we're asking for a waiver and things like that, but we've exposed a lot of dirty laundry in this proposed resolution here that I really, again, don't think is appropriate for the body of the legislature to say we're sending this out. I don't have any problem with saying we need a waiver. We've got a problem in the superintendent, going back to Secretary of Education saying giving this detail, but the question is, the superintendent working on trying to get some help on her own through
Chair Comp, Representative Wisnett, the superintendent is we're engaged in asking all of the associations that you're all familiar with and the partners in education to also support this. And so it frankly didn't seem strange at all when Representative Comp thought about the legislature weighing in. In fact, it seemed like a good fit, a united front, the whole state pushing forward. All of these details are on our website, and they are in national publications, national trade publications. This story is being told across the country, and so the inclusion of the detail, whether or not it's appropriate from sort of a diplomatic standpoint to another agency, I would leave to you. But for as far as concerns about it being out there in the public eye, it is out there, and we're being very transparent about what's happened, and really not holding anything back. The only issues are sort of the word choices that DOJ gets nervous about.
Okay. Looking at the clock and a few other things, and I guess what I would first say is my appreciations for everything you have done. I know this weighed heavily on you, And I could only imagine how many sleepless nights you had in making your decisions. And what I would suggest to the committee, that let's reflect on this some more before we do anything else with it. And,
I have no
Representative
problem.
Representative Roble.
I am one of those people who thinks that we should send something. Changing some of these words might be is okay with me, but I, from the standpoint of saying we as a legislature want the federal government to work with us on behalf of our kids and our school districts, I am totally in favor of asking that question. How the exact words come out, you can work on that one. But
right.
I think it's an appropriate thing for us to weigh in and say these things happen, and the people who should not be held accountable for that are the kids taking these tests and the schools that are doing it. And from that standpoint, this is the right thing to do. It's just, if you want to figure out some of the words, that's fine with me.
Well, what I'm thinking is if we possibly would go to a work session and move it to the full committee with no recommendation to possibly give us some more time.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Dennis. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on HJM 3 and open a work session for HJM 3.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Buckley.
I move House Joint Memorial 3 to the full Education Committee without recommendation.
We need the amendment.
We're going to do the amendments first. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Buckley. Rescind the other motion?
I rescind my other motion.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Memorial, the dash one amendments to House Joint Memorial 3.
There's been a motion to move the dash one amendments to House Joint Memorial 3. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, only to note that it's comforting to know that there is a Senate memorial that treats the subject that was the original subject of this memorial, which I think we should not leave behind, related to the sort of unfunded mandate. And so I look forward to that coming over. It's here.
Thank you, Representative Cannon.
One other question, and your pause to reflect suits me very well. But how soon will this be in front of the full committee?
Sometime within the next 10 days.
We wouldn't. I guess what I'm asking is, are we on a fast track, or will tomorrow? No.
No, okay. I don't. Yeah,
Mr.
no.
Also, might be able to shed some
more number. It is, Madam Chair, Representative Dowell, it is currently scheduled for tomorrow. That doesn't mean we have to work it. We can put on a different date.
Thank you. Any objections to the motion? Representative Wisnett.
I'll
vote no. Okay.
I'm
so noted.
I support the concept that when I was speaker and a legislator and all the time, when there are things moving through the court, I've always been very careful to not weigh in. And I understand the logic and I understand the request, but I'm personally uncomfortable wading into an area in which the courts are having their say and having their way. And I understand the intent of this language, and I certainly am sympathetic to Mr. Dennis. I know that he's been put in a terrible position, but I think when things get tied up in court, and maybe this is in your view, we're testifying, we shouldn't be penalized. I understand that, but it's just I've always whether it's a constituent concern or anything else, I've just said as long as it's in the courts, I've not interfered with that. So for that reason, not any reflection on the department, I'm not going to be able to support the gun stuff today.
Okay. Andy, I think we'll do a roll call on the motion for the amendment to be accepted.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative Dowell?
No.
Representative Minnis?
No.
Representative
Roland?
Aye.
Representative
Wisnett?
No.
Chair
Hawk?
Aye.
The amendment's in. Madam Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 3 as amendment to the full Committee on Education.
Without recommendation.
Thank you. There's been a motion by Representative Buckley to move HJN 3 to the full committee with amendments without recommendation. Discussion.
Madam Chair, since this will be my last time to chime in on this, at least officially, I wanted to say perhaps some of these concerns could be addressed by softening or even eliminating much of the whereas clauses, which are read to me somewhat argumentative and somewhat as a sort of statement of fact related, as you would see in a, you know, deposition or a court proceeding. And the statement of intent here that we hope the Department of Education will work with the state is, I think, very important, a very important message to send as a body. Support the resolution, but I also would encourage the full committee to look at perhaps some softening or elimination of some of that original language of the whereas.
So noted. Any other comments?
No, I will support this if we're going to get a chance to look at it in the full and change the tone of it. But what's going through my mind is, what if the court finds no breach? What if the court finds not in our favor? I can protect kids, I can protect schools. If I ask the United States Department of Ed know that we're thinking about kids, I'm sure they will. In fact, I asked my colleague here, Arnie, certainly if we asked them to consider our children, wouldn't they do that? I want most definitely to let them know that that's where we are.
Thank you so much, Representative Dahl. You spoke what I've had in my heart, so thank you. Would the clerk take the roll?
Aye.
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 No.
Aye. Motion passes. House Joint Memorial will move on to the full committee with no recommendation. With that, I close the work session on House Joint Memorial 3, and I open the... oh, goodness, we have four other bills, committee. Okay. For the people that came the longest distance, we're going to open House Bill 2576. Mr. Olson. It is a work session for House Bill 2576.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2576, which was previously heard on April 10th, directs school districts that share territory to change boundaries or merge so that districts no longer share territory. Specifies an exception, declares an emergency, is effective on passage. There's a dash one amendment, which I neglected to include in the packet, but I will give to my colleague to pass out, that changes the implementation date to July 1st, 2009. It's the same dash one amendment that we looked at last time. Madam Chair, this has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue. I have large maps here explaining the overlap. There are representatives from both of the affected school districts, the Klamath County School District and the Klamath Falls City School District, who are here should the committee have questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Committee, we originally had, we heard this bill on the 10th, and today's the 19th. It's only 9 days later. This is an issue that I understand has been long-standing in this community. And are there any questions or thoughts on this bill at this time? Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I have looked at this, and I think it's probably good to look at the map if we have a chance.
Okay.
Some people haven't seen the map. But I'm going to use my friend Representative Dahlem's deal and say, I really don't like us getting into micromanaging local control issues that need to be dealt with by local control. And I know it's been going on for a long time, and I know it's frustrating. You know, if I was going to do anything in this, I'd tell them that the people in that district have to vote, and their vote decides where everything in it goes, and that's it. Done story. They get to decide where they go. They go in one district or the other, it's all done. But that's not what this bill says, and I get frustrated with it, and I wish I don't see how I can vote for it. That's just me.
Okay. Representative Dahlem.
If the Klamath County people are in there working very hard to resolve this issue, and don't hold me to the numbers, but five public meetings, joint board meetings and a breakfast meeting. They're doing everything they can. I think this bill should probably die. But because they're working on it, I would keep it going through the process. And as soon as they say they've got their meetings done, they got a plan, and then drop it. I think I was... As soon as I have an opportunity to drop it, I'd like to drop it.
my metaphor for that would be Representative Dahl, and we've taken a stewing pot from the back burner and put it in the front of the stove and turned the burner on high. I understand you completely, because I, too, would like to see the community resolve it, but if it takes some pressure from us to keep the pot cooking till the stew gets resolved and made, I'm not comfortable, but I too think we ought to keep the bill in the process. And I'd like to hear other members' thoughts. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the comments that have come before about the discomfort that we all feel, and I think ought to feel, about moving forward with this. Nevertheless, the incentive it might provide for folks to get together and work this out locally. My concern, in part, is that I really am not sure what the bill means. I don't know what it requires, if this actually became law, and I understand, I hope with you all, that it doesn't, but if it did, what would happen? What are the consequences for them not reaching an agreement? I heard from one of the affected parties that would mean a merger. If they weren't able to agree on a boundary change, there would be an automatic merger. I understand we have a separate process in statute for merging school districts, so it's not at all clear to me what happens in 2009, assuming we adopt the Dash 1 amendments. There's just a real, which maybe was intentional in order to keep the parties together, but it's hard to move forward with something that we're not quite sure what it means, at least for me.
Well, I noticed Representative Girard's in the room. Would you mind coming forward and answering what Representative Cannon has asked?
Representative Bill Girard, District 56, Klamath Falls. Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, that was the intent of this bill. Always has been and still remains, is to keep the two parties at the negotiating table to a point where we know there's no going back. We want this problem, as Representative Roblin and Representative Dallum indicated. We have always felt this problem needed to be solved locally, but our two district school boards for 40 some years have not seen fit to sit down and do it. This bill makes them sit down and do it, and that's what this bill is all about.
And just to clarify, the do it is to either change their boundaries or merge. That's what I see in our summary statement.
Madam Chair, as far as I am concerned, the bill deals the bill deals only with a boundary change. A consolidation of the two school districts, I believe, should be a ballot measure.
Okay.
Okay.
So noted. Representative Roblin.
They were kind enough to give us maps and stuff a while ago, and I look at it. So what's so frustrating to me is both of these two districts own property within this disputed area. It has to be divided up somehow and cost. I don't know how this gets there. it's driving me crazy because, I mean, I tend to believe that maybe the group that's there in that territory own those schools and they should decide where they want to go, one way or the other. I don't know how else to get there, personally. So, I don't know if this does it.
Madam Chair, Representative Roland, that discussion, as I understand it, is now taking place.
Okay.
And may result in a new board game. I don't know.
Yeah, it could.
Representative Minnis.
As we all noted, the legislature put a timeline on their deliberations this session, first time, to force people into making decisions and to get consensus. And whether it might get pretty, raucous before it's all done, but decisions will be made. And sometimes when you put a timeline in place, it forces people to the table
in a timely manner and forces them to make some decisions. And 40-some years is a long time to have this issue going on, and I certainly respect that the local officials are having difficulty here. Some feel like some will have some advantage more than others. But I'm hopeful that just by moving this that they can get to the table and get agreement and bring this issue to closure.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill, the wording of the bill does seem to require either a boundary change or a merger. There's no other option. During testimony, there was discussion about what if after the intense negotiations, the decision is that any proposed change is worse than the situation we have now. Could that be taken to a vote of the people? And I was hoping to see some sort of outlet for the public to make a decision on this issue, and to try to keep that decision as much as locally as possible. So I do have a concern. I do know that any proposed boundary change does have to go through a process. There's one way I could see getting around this bill, the intent of this bill, of making a slight boundary change of one block over, and they satisfy the requirements of this bill. So I do have a concern on that. Again, I want to try to see, is there a way to amend the bill to give an outlet if the people of this area want to keep things the way they are, if that's their decision.
Madam Chair, what if we, if they want to work on some language, we could move this to the fall. That would give them, you think it's necessary, some time to bring some changes back to the fall to make that change in fall. Is that okay with you, Representative?
I'm sorry, I wasn't following.
If the bill needs to be amended to clarify some of those issues that have been raised. We could move the bill out of the sub, and then they could take up any amended language up in the fall that would address the
excellent suggestion, Representative.
Representative Roblin.
I was just talking with Representative Dahl. You know, a few years ago we passed legislation here because we had so many school districts, and we just basically said all elementary districts are going to merge into their high school districts, end of story, at a certain date. And he was thinking 94 was going to happen. And I believe that was about right.
You guys are old.
It caused a lot of pain and suffering around the state. And I know a number of places in our area had to do that. And it has worked. And so, you know, I don't like to take sides in this one, but one of them has a high school and the other, it's kind of like there's an elementary district and a high district. And I look at that as I was kind of doing these things and say, I mean, there is kind of an elementary district within this area and a high school, and why didn't it happen when that happened? And I guess it happened because there were two high school districts.
Yeah.
So I don't understand that. I mean, it should have happened then, and I don't know why it didn't happen.
Okay.
So, but that's it. I would be okay to, without recommendation, move it to the full. So I'll get another bite of the apple on that one.
What I'm going to suggest, committee, is that Representative Girard could work with the two entities on possible some language changes, and that I would be open to a motion to move this to the full committee.
Since he brought it here and these people seem to have a problem, he's going to get to go do that. I would be willing to do that. I would move it to the full while he get a chance to do that.
Well, I thought you were going to volunteer to help.
No, I'm not volunteering to help on this one.
Serious, you know.
I think Gollum wanted to do that.
You have lots of good experience. Okay.
I would help my colleague with.
Okay. So now, you move what, Representative Roblin?
Go ahead, yeah, but I will.
Thank you.
There's no amendments in this one, is there?
Yes.
Oh, yes, there is a dash one. I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2576.
There's been a motion to move the amendments to House Bill 2576. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Buckley.
No, on this amendment. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Any objections of the amendment going into this bill? So moved.
I'll have our other one do that because I'm not sure how I'm voting yet.
Okay.
Representative Minnis, here's the language.
All right. I move House Bill 2576 to the Education Committee with no recommendation.
As amended. There's a motion to move House Bill 2576 to the full committee with amendments with no recommendation. Comments? Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd like to comment. I really do hope there's a way that the parties involved can look at this as a timeline, that, that the request has come for, you know, this has been going on for so long, a decision needs to be made. It would be great if you come back to us and say that you've agreed on what the process will be to make the decision within the timeline. That would be my preference and my strong urging.
Before we take the vote, Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Garrard, are you comfortable with the direction of this?
Very much so, and I think Representative Buckley has an excellent suggestion, and I happen to be what I consider to be friends with both school superintendents, and I believe we are already have begun that process, but I think this is an excellent manner in which to proceed.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Cannon.
As the parties work with Representative Garrard, or perhaps Representative Dallin, who I think volunteered on this, I wonder...
did you catch that, public?
But it is being in the minority, a brute.
I would only recommend that whatever amendment is adopted is one that both parties dislike. I mean, I guess... Really, what we're trying to do is create a scenario. I'm actually kind of serious about this. If one party likes the bill, even if they're sort of quiet about it, but likes it, then they don't have much of an incentive to sit down and negotiate. The point is to get them together. So the solution, if they don't get together, should be one that both parties are a little bit afraid of. And maybe that was the intention of the ambiguity in this bill about what that solution would be. But I'd just be hesitant moving forward if one party is like, yeah, well, let the clock run out. So...
Representative Roblin.
I have to agree. It's a very Solomon-like answer to this question. So, I mean, if there's a place to write a line and Glenn gets this part and this part and it's not what anybody wants, maybe that's a good thing to happen. You know, cut that little baby right in half and get on with it. So. But I would hope that they solve their problem because I don't feel comfortable trying to do this at all.
With that, will the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
Representative
Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
Dahl?
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion passes. House Bill 2576 will now move to the full committee. And I am closing the work session on House Bill 2576. Okay, committee, we're going to open the have a work session on House Bill 3179. Mr. Olson, if you'll review with us what this bill's about.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3179 changes information that a school district may request from a public charter school applicant. It changes criteria for approving a public charter school proposal. Specifies time periods for appeal or denial of application of a public charter school and for the State Board of Education review. Allows the public charter school or sponsor to request state board review of whether specified provisions have been violated, declares an emergency, and is effective July 1st, 2007. What we have new before us, we've heard this bill twice on April 3rd and April 12th. What's new before us today, members of the committee, is a -3 amendment, which is very similar to the -2, except for it clarifies the issue that was some people expressed concern about. That is, it restores language allowing school districts to require, not request, but to require additional information relevant to the formation or operation of a public charter school, providing that the additional information was needed, quote, to ensure that the board and school meet, A, the requirements of federal and state law, and B, board policies that support the legislative intent and goals listed in an ESSISA statute. And then it includes what was in the -2, namely it adds in statute the option of a conditional approval of a public charter school proposal based on the two requirements, A and B, that I just stated. And it changes the timeline to the Department of Ed to 150 days, vice 120 days, to complete its appeal review. It also clarifies that a different timeline could be agreed upon mutually between the charter school applicant and the State Board of Education. That is the gist of the -3 amendment, which again takes the -2 and adds the back in the require language. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have two members of this committee that sponsored this bill. Just to note the time, committee, there's one more bill at the end of our agenda.
Okay.
There's one more that I definitely want to work today. So if Representative Roblin or Dahlem would give us a little bit of update and...
Well, I will just say that we asked the parties to get together and come up with language which would get it to the point where we think it's ready to move to the full committee. I think we are there. I mean, there may be some concerns. I'd love to hear if there are people who have some other real concerns with it.
Okay. Representative Dahlem?
I think we do have some people that still have concerns.
Okay.
I would move it to the full, but I would certainly want to entertain those concerns before we move it out of there. But because of the time, because of the small schedule that the full committee has, I would move it there, but with the dash three. But I want the opportunity to amend it again.
Okay.
I would talk to the chairman.
You're going to work with the chair.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative, do you know what the...
Go ahead.
Do you know what the concerns are?
Well, I think some of the... I got the amendment today. I got word today that some of the parties don't feel that it doesn't give school boards enough information. I'm really not sure because of the timing, and I understand how Lids Council is cranking these out as quickly as they can, but I'd like to be sure everybody's had a review of them.
Okay.
And so the simple answer is no.
Okay. But is there, are either of you wanting to move the dash threes or just move the whole package to?
Move the dash threes. And,
yeah.
And with the indulgence of the chair of the full committee.
Right. Okay.
We'll get to the bottom of this.
Give me indulgent.
Representative Roblin.
I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 3179.
There's a motion to move the dash three amendments to House Bill 3179. Any further discussion? Any objections? So moved.
Do you want this one to be not recommended or?
Yeah.
Or do pass?
Not recommended.
Okay. I'll go with Representative Dahlem on this one. I move House Bill 3179 to the full Education Committee without recommendation.
And with the amendments.
As amended.
There is a motion to move House Bill 3179 with the dash threes as amended with no recommendation to the full committee. Any discussion? Thank you, committee. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Buckley?
Aye.
Representative
Chairman?
Aye.
Representative
Dahlem?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Aye. So moved. I will close the work session on House Bill 3179. I'm going to apologize to Representative Crummell and make... I need to move it. Can we move House Bill 2606 to the full committee without recommendation?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, it would be nice to have a work session, yes. Okay. I open a work session on House Bill 2606. Could I have a committee member move us to some action?
Are there amendments on this one?
It's wrong again.
You want us to put them in?
Just read the very brief summary. Mr. Olson, so we make sure this is the bill we want to move to the full committee.
Yes, Madam Chair. House Bill 2606 modifies the main points are to allow students to graduate in less than 4 years or advance to the next grade level if a student meets credit requirements. The dash three amendment clarifies, it has dash one and dash two plus some additional language. Dash three amendment clarifies that local districts school district requirements, in addition to the State Board of Education requirements, must be met. Adds that a school district cannot change the graduation requirements after a student begins the ninth grade unless a change in state or federal law mandates the change. That's new in the dash three. And clarifies that early graduation or early grade advancement would be only at the request of the student with parent or guardian consent. So two of those were in the previous amendments, and the not being able to change after you start high school is new in the dash three. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Yeah.
I just have a comment. I think in this form, I would not be able to support the Dash 3 amendments. I'm looking for them. I'm looking at them for the first time. But this restriction on the school district's ability to set its own diploma criteria for its students, even pre-existing ones, and I understand the intent in here, even ongoing students, is one that I'm very hesitant to move forward with without talking to my schools and my school district.
Thank you, Chair Cannon.
Chair.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
One day. And the influence lingered.
There's a suggestion to move the bill without amendments as is to the full so we can have as much, well, it's not until June 29th anyway, but a better length of time to discuss and inform our decision.
Do you want to carry this over?
To the full, yes.
I will make the motion, reserving the right to agree with Mr. Cannon at that point if I decide I don't like the bill. So, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Roblin.
I move House Bill 2606 to the Education Committee without recommendation.
There's a motion to move House Bill 2606 to the full committee without recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, do we know if Representative Crummell's had a chance to see the amendments?
Yes, he has had a chance to see the amendments.
He was okay.
Well, can we reserve that,
yes,
that discussion? Because I think we absolutely owe Representative Crummell full consideration of of the work he's done on this.
Thank you.
Representative Dolan?
Good share, Jerry.
Okay. Any other comments?
Just to each other.
Okay, thank you.
This will make sure that we get the Thursday meeting the following as well.
Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative
Buckley?
Aye.
Representative
Cannon?
Aye.
Representative Dolan?
Aye.
Representative Menace?
Aye.
Representative
Brooklyn?
Aye.
Representative Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair
Caulker? Aye. House Bill 2606 passes and moves to the full committee. I close the work session on House Bill 2606, and I'm opening the work session on House Bill 2037. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2037, which was last heard on February 6th, but then subject of a work group, allows public charter schools that offer online courses to have over 50% of its students reside in a district other than the school district which the charter school is located. It applies to school years starting in 2007-2008. Declares an emergency effective July 1st. The effect of the Dash 1 amendment, which you have before you, replaces the entire text of the bill and does the following. It defines a, quote, virtual public charter school, unquote, provides a framework for the State Board of Education to waive the requirement that public charter schools that offer any online courses are required to have at least 50% of its students reside in a district in which the school is located by delineating a detailed set of requirements and providing for an appeals mechanism if the board denies the virtual public charter school's appeal, direct reporting requirements for a virtual public school charter, a virtual charter school that is granted a waiver, and for existing public charter schools these do not apply to them until the school's charter is amended or renewed. And there's no subsequent referral. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. I would like to make one comment before we start the discussion. As Mr. Olson has stated, we first looked at this bill the first week in February, and it's now April 19th, and I can't believe that Representative Cannon gave me such a great transition statement to bring this bill to us today, because I asked two people at the opposite ends of the spectrum to work on this bill. And they have worked very hard. They did site visits. They had morning meetings. And they did a tremendous job on this bill. And so what I would share because we do have time left today, and I guess we've got to use our time to the fullest, but please don't feel at any point if either of you wants to make a motion to move this to the full, please feel comfortable with doing that. But if you guys have, if our good work group has done most, all the work that they've done, I believe we can pass this bill today, but we'll wait and see. Representative Dahl, Representative Cannon, do you want to make some comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to say that it was a pleasure to work with Representative Dahlem on this issue. We did spend quite a bit of time on it, and we got amendments that I only received, I think Representative Dahlem only received, either late last night or this morning. I have some questions related to those amendments. I think that they do generally what we had intended to do, which was describe the conditions under which the State Board may use its pre-existing authority to waive the 50% rule for a virtual charter school. They have that authority now. In our investigation of virtual schooling and in our conversations about virtual schooling, I think we concluded it would be wise to give the State Board some guidance about when it would be permissible for them to waive the 50% rule. And most of this bill, most of this amendment, contains some expression of our thinking about what a virtual charter school should have to do in order to be not subject to the 50% rule. So that's, I think, the intention of the amendment, at least from my perspective. I have some questions about whether it accomplishes exactly that.
Okay. Is counsel available to answer a few questions yet today?
Madam Chair, I alerted them we might have some questions. Let me call and see if they're able to come up.
I
think they might be tracking our hearing.
Okay. Representative Dahlem.
I think that between Representative Cannon and I, we're down to two questions.
Okay.
And we both share that we want to be absolutely certain that this bill does what we think it does. And I'm confident it does. But it'll be good to have Ledge Council here and assure us. And the issue comes to a grandfather. We have talked with the existing charter school, and we're not interested in a grandfather, and we want to be sure that that's what the language says. And I'm sure that I'll be more sure when Ledge Council tells me. But
okay.
That was really the message. We get those two questions answered, and I'm comfortable moving the bill today.
Madam Chair, Legislative Council is on their way up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the work done by committee members. I do find to move this to the full, and I would want to take some time in the full. I'd like to hear from OSBA. I'd like to hear from folks. I'd like to hear from the State Board folks before we move further on this. I would like to hear their comments on the amendment as well.
Representative Cannon?
I appreciate, Madam Chair, thank you, and I appreciate Representative Buckley making that point. Like I said, this is something, language we only got back today. The draft that went down to LC, I think, was shopped in a very small group. I mean, it largely represented Representative Dahlem in my thinking, so I think it would be inappropriate for us to represent it as the consensus product of a larger group than sort of our mind meld. And so I think it is very important that before moving it to the floor, it receives some, we get some feedback from those who will be impacted by it.
I would let everybody on the committee know that it was an open process, and all the interested people that had an interest were invited at different points, but as stated, the amendment is very recent. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have no problem with it moving. Right now, I'm going to vote no for exactly the same reasons Representative Buckley had said. I have some real concerns. I haven't had a chance to read it. I don't know what it does. I have a personal hard time. We've talked a little bit about this. Doing away with the 50% rule. I think charter schools in this state were designed to be locally controlled schools for local kids, and I have a real hard time with it. So this is a hard bill. Right now, I'm going to vote no, and then go from there. And if it gets in the full committee and we get to the hearing and all those things, they may be able to change their mind.
Okay.
Thank
you. Council, we have a couple of questions. If you would weigh in with your name and credential, and then we just have a couple of questions about the amendment.
Okay. Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel.
Thank you, Cindy. Representative Cannon.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Cindy, for your work on this. I am looking at page 4 of the Dash 1 amendments to 2037, and I understand that this amendment, this bill really concerns the virtual charter school's ability to seek a waiver of a particular rule regarding charter schools, which is 50% of their students have to be in the attendance area. And the board, as I understand, and I hope you'll correct me if I'm wrong, the board may waive that rule, but only under certain conditions. Am I right on that?
Yes, Chair Comp, Representative Cannon, you are correct. And the language that, in particular, you should be looking for is on page 2 at the top. And that talks about how the State Board of Education, right on line 1, mm-hmm. may waive, it's not a shall, the requirements of that particular provision if the virtual public charter school meets the requirements of this section, which as it's laid out.
Okay, follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, go right ahead, Representative Cannon.
My first thought is that would appear to make it, there's a higher bar for the state board to meet before it waives it, given that it has current statutory authority to waive it for any reason it sees fit. Am I correct in that?
Yeah. Chair Comp, Representative Cannon, that's correct. This very specific statutory direction would take precedence over that more general statutory direction.
Follow up, Madam Chair. On page 4 of the amendments, and this is where I was getting, section 3B, so starting line 8, if the waiver is not granted, the virtual public charter school may amend the application and essentially address the objections of the board. If the board, beginning line 11, if the board denies a waiver after the amended application, the school may seek judicial review of an order of the state board pursuant to ORS 183.484. I'm wondering if you could describe, this was new to me when I read this morning, and I'm wondering if you could describe where that sort of came from and what the purpose of that part of the amendment is.
Mm-hmm. Chair Comp, Representative Cannon, when the amendments came into my office, there was an expression in them to have an appeal provision of the state board's decision granting, and this sort of judicial review is throughout the charter school law, and it's very standard for review of agency decisions. It sets forth a whole process for how you review those decisions with dates and where that they can file to review the decision, which would be Marion County Circuit Court or the Circuit Court where the charter school is located.
Yeah.
So it's very consistent with the rest of charter school law.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Madam Vice Chair. Madam.
Certainly.
Thank you. If that language was not in this amendment, I just want to be really clear. I'm not suggesting necessarily that we remove it, but if that language was not included in the amendment, would it be the case that a charter school would have the ability to appeal through the judicial review process any decision of the state board?
Yeah. Chair Kopp, Representative Cannon, yes, unless you had other language in there that said the state board's decision is final.
Very good.
Which is another option.
And one final question, if I may?
Yes.
And then I'll be done. And it's on a different subject, but it relates to Section 5. And could you describe what Section 5 of the bill does, please?
Yes.
Of the amendment.
Yes, Chair Comp, Representative Cannon.
You got it.
Section 5, what that does is it talks about how the 50% requirement applies to public charter schools that were in operation on September 2nd, 2005. The reason for that date, that's the effective date of that provision, the 50% provision. So if the school was in operation on the date that that particular provision went into effect, then that provision does not apply to them until one of two things happens. Either the sponsor and that charter school governing board agree to amend the school's charter. That's something they have to do by mutual agreement. Or that the charter school, the charter of it is renewed, which presumably would be within 5 years of the date when the charter was initially done.
And I apologize for monopolizing, because I know that we're running out of time. So I do want to let others, in particular Representative Dallum, ask any questions that he has. But I guess I wonder whether this Section 5 represents a change to existing statute. I mean, this might be a matter of interpretation, but.
Yeah. In my opinion,
yeah.
Okay, is that charter schools essentially have a contract with their sponsor. And arguably, the legislature, based on constitutional law, cannot affect those contracts until that contract expires. So an existing charter school that had a contract, or a charter, whatever you want to call it, with their sponsor on September 2, 2005, those laws that would affect that charter may not apply to that charter school until that charter runs out. So when the charter gets renewed, essentially they're entering into a new charter, a new contract. When they mutually agree to amend their contract, they're also affecting their contract. So in my opinion, this reflects current law.
And thank you very much. And my comment would be that I would be, given that answer, I would be fine with moving forward with this. I would also be fine if the full committee saw it wise to remove Section 5, given that I don't think it changes. It's your interpretation that it doesn't actually change the status of a school chartered on before September 2nd.
It does clarify it,
okay,
for sure. I mean,
thank you, Council. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I make a motion that we move House Bill 2037 to the floor with...
No, we need the amendment.
I move the amendment. Pardon me. I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2037.
There is a motion to move amendments to House Bill 2037. Any further discussion? Any objections? So moved. Representative Dahlem.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2037 to the Education Committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Dahlem moves House Bill 2037 with a due pass as amended to the full Education Committee. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair, I wish to get more information on the amendment.
Great. And so the committee knows I want to... I have one little thing of business to do yet after this vote, please. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Aye.
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 No.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2037 with the -1 amendments are moved to the full committee. I'm closing the work session on 2037-1. And believe it or not, people, life moves fast. I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2576. I have been informed by Representative Girard that he has consulted with the two separate superintendents, and they have made a commitment to sit down together and work this out by February of 08. They're not going to continue this debate, dialogue, any longer than that. And with that, I am requesting that we just hold on to this bill and not move it. Can we? I don't know how we legally do that.
I'm never so happy to kill a bill in my life.
Actually, we can send it up to the committee with that, and our committee chair knows that, so he can just not hear it.
I will listen to the recommendation verbally provided here.
Okay, so it's already. We'll just hold it, and that. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2576. Right. We have two announcements yet, and we will be finished here in a moment.
I wouldn't want you to get done before my committee meeting.
I know, Representative Roblin. But we also have a commitment from the Department of Education and James Zager that we will get the spreadsheet as requested by the end of the day tomorrow for everybody's notice. And Mr. Olson?
Madam Chair, briefly, two things. One is I'll resend out the presentation I have from Nancy Heiligman to the committee, which might be helpful in addition to whatever the Governor's Office, Department of Education provides. And secondly, just following up on What was done at the committee, we will, and discussing briefly with the chair, we will not have a work session tomorrow in the full education committee on House Bill 2576,
right.
Nor will we have a work session on House Joint Memorial 3, pending further possible amendments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. And before I close, you had a comment, Representative?
I just wanted to thank Representative Cannon and Representative Mays for their work on the side.
Absolutely.
And we'll see them next month.
I agree.
And with that, that's what I was going to share, is we will not be having the subcommittee until we start hearing bills from the Senate. And so with that, thank the committee for the work we've been doing on House bills.
Thank
and we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair.